The Car Dealer Podcast is sponsored by SalesLink from Jato, a market insight tool that's purpose-built for franchise car dealers. Get analysis on thousands of new vehicle transactions every month from all the major brands. See model mix and trim data for the brands you sell, as well as competitor data, all in the free web-based platform. It lets you track vehicle option uptake, color preferences, and gives detailed data on pricing and discounts. Sign up for your free SalesLink account today. Visit jato.com/saleslink to start unlocking your market insights.
Welcome back to a Christmas Car Dealer Podcast, where we pick our favorite stories of the week and ask an industry guest to choose which were the best. I'm wearing a stupid jumper, and so is James Baggett, who joins me now. James, what's new with you?
Mine is definitely a lot worse than yours, John. Definitely a lot worse than yours. I've been doing a lot this week, as you well know, but we should tell people who are listening to the podcast what we've been up to, shouldn't we? We've had a week on the road. I stayed in the most luxurious Premier Inn known to man, which was effectively the junior suite. I'm pretty sure it was Lenny Henry's own suite at the Premier Inn in Derby.
Wonderful. Yes, he often goes to Derby, actually.
He does. But we had a good couple of days, didn't we? We spent 2 days with Jamie Capel, one of our used car award winners. He's the winner this year of over 100 cars category. And he gave me some work experience in his used car dealership, which was very enjoyable. I learned all the tricks of the trade. All the ones that are worth knowing, at least. He got me on the phones talking to some customers, which went reasonably well. I didn't sell a car, but I certainly tried. I spoke to a lovely man who wanted to buy a Range Rover and wanted to chop in his Toyota Aygo for it, which he bought brand new, and he wanted to buy a 15-year-old Range Rover. I can't work out why he wanted to do that either. But then we also spent a day at the auctions, didn't we? Which was great fun. We went to Aston Barclay in Leeds and saw a lot of stuff go through the auctions. And I think what I really learned was just how brave you have to be a used car dealer. Mm. I mean, Jamie was buying this stuff with very little information. I mean, he'd gone there very well prepared, as you know. Like, he'd spent the day looking through the auction catalogue, working out what the retail prices were for these cars, looking what the top price he'd want to pay at auction and trade. And he did leave a lot of them, didn't he? He didn't actually buy everything. But we were watching some of this stuff come through the auction hall, and there was that BMW X5 that was, like, sagging at the rear where one of the suspension things was broken. And he still bid on it, didn't he? He still bid on it. And I just thought, well, I wouldn't have touched that with a barge pole. But clearly, this is, like, it's all about experience when it comes to buying used cars. He buys huge amounts in auctions every week. And I really admired his bravery and his knowledge. And it sort of showed me that AI will probably not be able to help me with that, because it's experience when it comes to buying this sort of stuff. But yeah, I really enjoyed this week and I've learned a lot.
Yes, I think with the auctions, a lot of it is obviously just, as you say, his experience of doing it for however many years, because he could just, you know, you would go into that auction. There would be, for example, there was a BMW 3 Series with a bit of damage here and there, wasn't there? Just superficial stuff like a cracked bumper and all that sort of stuff, cracked splitter. And you would go, oh, I don't know how much, you know, you'd have to Google how much these things were and do all that sort of stuff. Jamie has bought hundreds of those already, knows how much those splitters are, knows how much a wing mirror is, therefore can leave it if he decides the wing mirror is broken, because he thinks that'll be a grand. That sort of thing, he's got it all in his head, hasn't he? Whereas
it was those sort of top tips, wasn't it? Like, wing mirrors, if it's got a broken wing mirror, don't go near it. If it's got a broken headlight, definitely don't go near it. It was the panoramic roof. He said he's had so many problems with those. They're like a 1,500 quid repair every time. The blinds he was talking about, wasn't he, in the car. If it's got a panoramic roof and a blind that's not working, don't go near it. Mm. And these are all things you only know with experience. So, yes, a very enjoyable week, John. But we've got a very special guest this week, haven't we? So I should probably stop talking about what I've been doing. We should probably talk to him.
We do indeed. Our festive guest, I'm pleased to say, is the one and only Mike Brewer.
Mike. Hey, guys. How you doing? Was I on screen all that time? I didn't know what to... You were rattling away, the pair of you.
Possibly.
I'll cut you out of the video. You're fine. Don't worry.
Yeah, perfect.
Anyway, Mike, how are you?
I'm all right. Yeah, just listening to James's story of going to a physical car auction. It's a great place to be. Very exciting. you can get carried away with yourself, but I think you went with the right guy, Jamie Capel. If you're going to go with anyone, go with him. He would know it backwards.
It's certainly been a baptism of fire this week, Mike, and had a lot of your advice that I've listened to over the years ringing in my ears too. Let's have a little chat about your year. It's been a very special one, hasn't it, for Wheeler Dealers? Tell those people listening why it's been so special.
Well, we celebrated 20 years of Wheeler Dealers, this little show that I started to make in 2003 in October, with its first airing. 20 years later, we're still going and we're still making new series. And yeah, throughout the year, we've had many a celebration, no matter where I've been on the planet, whether it was in America or Germany or Poland or, you know, in the UK, particularly we've had many a celebration across the UK, recognising what achievement it's made in terms of the motoring landscape. You know, it's sparked a whole new genre of car restoration programmes. There's now networks dedicated to just that. Millions of people probably employed around the planet in that genre of car restoration shows, and they can all work their way back to this little show called Wheeler Dealers.
Well, it's obviously the car dealer podcast, so I'd like to focus on your experience in this world and what you're doing in it now. I mean, as I've been setting up this AI car dealership, I've had huge problems with banks. I've got turned down by another bank this week who just clearly, I spoke to my accountant, they just don't like used car dealers. They don't like the used car industry. Have you struggled when it comes to setting up your businesses? I mean, you've got two big used car dealership sites, haven't you now?
Yes.
Was it a struggle in those early days?
I'm going to be honest with you, James. No, not really. And whether that comes from a name or whatever, I'm not too sure. But no, you know what? I'm amazed that you're being turned down by banks, because if a bank thinks about it, your a used car dealership is actually a really good place to put their money. And the reason is because car dealers, they're not spending the money, you know, by gambling it away on something that you can't see. There is a tangible and physical asset for the bank if they needed to claim it back. You know, if you go and spend $4,000 on a Fiesta, you're going to sell for $5,000 and you don't sell it, there is a $4,000 Fiesta sitting somewhere that they can claim rights to. So it's a bit like, you know, a house and a mortgage. You know, that you get a mortgage because there's bricks and mortar and the banks can claim it back one day. So why you're getting turned down by so many banks, James, is a bit of a mystery, to be honest with you, because with interest rates where they are at 5%, money's expensive, and the banks are having it away at the moment by making more than they've ever made. You know, we'll see that in the middle part of next year. We'll start seeing huge bonuses being awarded to CEOs of all these big banks because they've had a great year in terms of interest rates. So it's a bit of a surprise that they're not grabbing you, because you're a good bet. You know, you're an established name. You've been around the trade for many a decade, and the assets will be tangible. There'll be a physical asset. So
you're going to have to write me a letter, Mike, that I can send to the bank managers.
I might lend you some money.
Yeah, thank you. That would be a lot easier. It's not annoying to asking to lend me money. I don't even want to borrow the cash. I just want to put it somewhere. But anyway, Mike, tell us a little bit about the new used car site that you've set up. Because when we met up for the used car awards, I was fascinated to hear about that. And I'm sure our listeners will be too.
Yeah, so we set up a van centre. I had this amazing space in Leamington Spa, Warwick, which was where I housed my car collection. And I sort of turned it into my ultimate man's cave. It was a bit excessive, I'll be honest with you. And it was all the trappings of my success that I put in this one building, and I went over the top with it. It looked incredible. And all the time I'm staring at this building, I'm thinking, why did I spend all this money on this building? I'm a businessman at the end of the day. Why did I spend all this money on this building? And it's not earning anything. All it does is satisfy me. I turn up once or twice a week, stare at my cars, polish something, pump a tire up and leave again. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to turn it into a business. So I set up with a good friend of mine, James. I set up with Michelle and James. We set up initially we just said it'd be there was a huge gap in the market in the Warwickshire area for vans. We noticed that There are very few van centres in the area, and commercial vehicle sales are going through the roof post-COVID because people are out there, you know, plumbers, electricians, carpenters, gardeners, dog walkers. There's all these people that need all varying different size of vans. So there's this huge gap in the market in our area. So we set up a van centre, but we tackled it slightly differently. We looked at vans that had become desirable. We wanted people that want to, but we don't want to buy, you know, service a van for someone who's going to repair the motorway, who's going to turn up with odd-nailed boots and ruin the thing within a month. We wanted to capture the market that were the slightly higher-end van purchasers, the people that want a van to show off as well as enjoy it for their business. They want to promote their business through their vehicle. So we set about starting this van centre, but slightly modifying the vans to give them that sort of urban look. And from there, it's just taken off. We've sort of found this niche in the market where we are, which is in the Midlands. And we're now servicing customers from as far abroad, wide as Scotland and Cornwall. We had somebody out from Cornwall this week to come and buy vehicles from us. And it's been absolutely phenomenal. And this is what I said to you when you come for your interview about the AI car dealership. You have to know what works in your area. You won't know what works until you try it. So you have to throw down an eclectic mix of vehicles and find out which ones are working. And if you're selling, as I said to you before, if you're selling five Fiestas a week but one Corsa, well, then buy Fiestas. That's where your market is. And we've noticed as well, small, affordable cars marked up under £10,000 that are really good spec, you know, Corsas, little Audi A1s, really good spec little cars like that. They also are very, very attractive in this area. It's been interesting. The business has been phenomenal, I'm not going to lie. We run it like a tight ship. We've got very good social media. It looks great online. It gets reviewed fantastically. I would dearly love it to win a used car award. But as I'm one of the proprietors of the business, people would cry foul, a bit like Mike Brew Motors, our other business in Sheffield. I'm very proud of it because this was something that only happened within the last year. And we've not gone through a full cycle yet, a full yearly cycle. But already I can see at the end of this year, we would have actually created a really phenomenal little business.
Yeah, I've been following it online and I know the site very well because we've filmed there, haven't we, for a couple of times.
Yes, we have, yeah.
Car Dealer Power, Used Car Awards, I think we did some stuff there before. What I'm really interested in, though, Mike, is why you decided to do it again. You know, I mean, you've been... You're a very busy man. You're clearly doing lots of stuff still with on TV. You've got Mike Brewer Motors. What made you do it again? I mean, what drove you to do that? And I'm pretty sure the answer is Michelle, is it?
James, you are a partner in our other business with my wife, Michelle. So I think you know why that happened, James. I have this tenacious little pocket rocket that is up my trapdoor constantly, and we should do this. At a time when I genuinely want to wind down in life, Misha wants to crank up our life. And she likes creating things. She likes the thrill and the buzz of having something that we can benefit out of, but other people can benefit out of. And she loves business. You know, she loves that kind of edgy business. And yes, it's the answer is Michelle. That's why. If Michelle never, I introduced Michelle to James. I actually sold James a car on Wheeler Dealers on the show. And I met this guy and I went, wow, he's amazing. He's a really cool guy. I wonder if I could, if I was ever to do business, it'd be with him. And then I come home, said that to Michelle and immediately, let's go for a coffee. So we go for a coffee with James, and at the end of the coffee, we've got a car dealership, you know, as simple as that, and it happens. And I'm pleased it did, you know, I'm really pleased it did, because this is such a great little business. It employs people in the area. We're contributing to the GDP of this country, as you know, And I'm very proud of it. You know, I'm really proud that within a year we've managed. And I think you'll see it's with minimal promotion from me. You know, it's a tiny little, you know, if I put my name all over it, it would be even bigger. But I thought, no, let's see if we can let this one fly on its own without having to be the front and face and have my name above the door, like my bigger micro motors. Let's see if this one can just, can we create a business that works without fallbacking from me in it? And we did.
Remind me of the name, Mike.
It's called One Automotive.
One Automotive, yeah.
And the reason that came around is because the address is one, number one. So I'm thinking, well, that's a pretty good address, number one. So what can I use the word one for? And I'll just put it with automotive, One Automotive.
Perfect. And just before we get on to this week's news, just tell me a little bit about the where you get the stock from. I mean, we talked at the start about auctions. I mean, you buy from auction or you're buying in other places?
We are the other Jamie Cable. Yeah, so we sit at commercial vehicle auctions and we pour through very carefully. We are buying late plated stuff. So we're buying stuff that's 21, 22 plated. So, you know, within 2 years or 1 or 2 years old, most of the stuff we get has still got a bit of manufacturer's warranty on it, which is really good. And that really helps. So that's from auction, but also privately. You know, we're looking on places privately, motorway. You know, we'll go and pluck and choose vehicles from all over the country. Last week we was up in Tyneside picking up a vehicle. There's a vehicle to pick up next week, which is down south in Cornwall again. We'll just travel wherever it takes us to go and get, you know, the vehicles we're looking for. We are trying to capture, you know, I was at the site yesterday, I'll be there today, and I'm trying to capture a segment of the market that doesn't exist. I'm almost trying to create a new market, if I was to be honest with you, which is if people buy Volkswagen Transporters as lifestyle vehicles. I've got one as a motorhome. And people buy them as lifestyle vehicles. They buy a transporter, they put a kitchen in the back, a rock and roll bed, pop the roof, and they go camping at the weekend. But nobody does that with a transit. A transit is a workhorse. It's the spine of Britain. It's the backbone. It's the what you go and throw your bricks and your mortar in the back and go and build a house. But I've been thinking long and hard about the transit market, thinking why? Why? The transit's a great-looking vehicle. It's got a great range of power from the engines, from 120 to 170 horsepower. Inside, if you go for the custom, they've got electric windows, air conditioning, multifunction screen. It's like a BMW inside. So why can't people use those as a lifestyle vehicle? So I've developed, with James at One Automotive, we've developed a more lifestyle version of a Ford Transit that's got a bed inside that slides backwards and forwards. You can put mountain bikes behind it. We've got a rack on the roof with a shower attachment, so with a jerry can shower, so you can clean the bike off and clean yourself off. Tents that go on the roof. We're trying to create a new genre in the marketplace. And just doing that within this business, within this van centre, is really exciting. You know, it's you're trying to find a different segment of a customer that you can sell to and you can engage with. That have never been there, they've never thought about it before until I show them it. And that's been working phenomenally well as well.
Amazing. Well, Mike, thank you for coming on the Christmas podcast. Much appreciated. But John, shall we do some stories now?
Yes, let's. So James and I are going to run through our favourite stories of the week. And at the end, Mike gets to decide which of us chose the best ones and who it is.
I'm quite judgy. I'll have you know I'm quite judgy.
Excellent. Excellent.
Well, I won last week somehow. You? So I did. I've checked and everything. So I'm going to go first. And we've got a lot of stories to choose from this week somehow, despite the fact that you haven't actually been anywhere near the office, James. But I'm going to go with news from...
Oh, I knew I had this.
Yeah. It's Cazoo. We haven't heard from them for a while. But some not-so-good news from Cazoo. They say they face the prospect of potentially going under I mean, that's a small prospect, but it's a prospect nonetheless, as they reveal new cash crisis. So this is in a regulatory filing, which is James's favourite kind of place to get a news story. He loves looking through all those regulatory filings.
Oh, yeah, great fun.
And the Cazoo, of course, being listed on the New York Stock Exchange, have to be quite candid in these filings as to the current state of their business. And this was on December the 19th. Can't remember what day this was, Tuesday or something. And they said, they revealed that their liquidity, so that is, I mean, everyone knows what liquidity is, was limited, and it must substantially alter or possibly discontinue operations if it didn't get any more money in the next, well, it's they're talking about the second half of next year, aren't they? That's when the clock is starting to run out on the amount of money that they've got. I'm going to hand it over to you, James, because
we've got more detail than that. I've definitely got lots to say on this. I mean, come on. Everybody in the motor trade saw this one coming, didn't they? I mean, this is... Every time I've posted a story about Cazoo, people have kind of counting down the days to when we get some sort of news similar to this. And I think the fact that you pointed it out, because they're on the New York Stock Exchange, they do have to be very open and honest about the situation. And it doesn't get more open and honest than this, does it? I mean, it's not looking good for them. I think the biggest problem Cazoo have had is we've had huge drops in used car prices over the last couple of months. October was 4.2% drop. Same in November. We've just reported today a 2.5% drop. 10.5% in the last quarter of this year. If you're carrying 5,000 cars on your website, that is a monumental amount of money that you have to write down. And these big online used car businesses like Cazoo, like Cinch, and some of the other ones out there are really going to have felt that pain. So I'm not surprised when I saw this news. The difficult bit is, where are they going to get the cash from? Because they've just renegotiated their huge debt, $630 million down to $200 million by a share swap, a complicated share swap that they did. So they've just renegotiated that debt, and now they're saying we need some more money. And I can't see any banks lining up to lend them the cash. And I actually can't see any private equity houses lining up to give them any more money. We've seen Alex Chesterman, the founder, stand down. He's disappeared from the business. And the rest of the management team, they're left holding a very, very difficult situation down. And I think next year we're going to see even more bad news. So, yeah, I'm not surprised. Everybody I've spoken to in the trade is not surprised. And it will be very interesting to see how this one develops next year. And we've got to remember, they employ a lot of people. Mm. They snapped up a lot of businesses. They made a lot of redundancies as they were struggling this year already. I'm afraid we'll probably see more of that in the future. Mike, what do you think of Cazoo? I mean, they really have come in, haven't they, and changed the way that the used car industry works. But they did it by winding the trade up, didn't they?
They did. Well, you know, they're an aggravator a bit, you know, and that's the problem. The used car industry has been running and functioning for 130 years, and it's been, and there is a pattern to the used car industry. And when you get somebody like the likes of Cazoo come in as an aggravator and sweep up, you know, huge sections of the used car trade, and have to hold on to stock, they have to have it as their business model. You know, that it's the biggest shop to come and buy a car, so we've got to have the biggest shop there. Once there is a change in fortunes in the marketplace, as in what you've just said, with used car prices dropping by 10%, that is going to come and bite anyone. I mean, it bites me at Micro Motors. It bites anyone really hard. And I was putting it into layman's terms in my brain. So if they've got, and I guess, you know, if you've got £50 million worth of stock, and the used car prices have dropped by 10%, you've just wiped off in 1 month or 2 months, you've just wiped off 5 million. And 5 million off your stock has just disappeared out the door, vaporized. And they'll be looking at the directors who have got, you know, probably £1 million houses and saying, how are you going to pay, guys? You know, we're 5 million behind. And looking at the forecast for next year, that's going to be 10 million. So where's the money coming from, guys? You know, you're going to chuck in, you know, a few million each. Where's that money coming from? So Yeah, in layman's terms, it's for them to understand it. It's a very, very, very tricky business. And that's why aggravators, I think, don't work. You know, these big pile of my sell them cheap aggravators in the marketplace, they fundamentally just don't work.
Yeah, I mean, I've said it before many times in this podcast. The motor trade, there's no love lost with Cazoo. I mean, the fact that they came into this industry and said what they did about the existing businesses that are out there, calling them sharp elbowed salesmen and some nasty comments that they made. Everybody is sort of waiting for this sort of news to come out, and when it does, sort of cheers it. So,
Yeah, look, there's no love lost between the used car network and Cazoo, and I think there'd be a lot of car dealers out there just, you know, kind of willing this story to its finite end, where we can all get back to just being car dealers. And I'm for the love of me, why do we get such a bad reputation? I just don't understand it. You know, why the people like Cazoo come in and say, you know, sharp elbowed old traders? Why do they do that? You know, the car trade is an amazing business. It supports and generates huge amounts of money to the GDP. It supports families up and down the country at a time of crisis at the moment. It puts people on the road in vehicles that you know, that they can pay monthly for and have a business to go back to if it goes wrong. I don't understand why people like Cazoo and members of the public would think that it's a bad business. The car dealership business. They're amazing people. Everyone I've met is amazing.
Yeah, hear,
I
hear.
think you can sum it up in it wasn't broke and they didn't need to try and fix it.
Good words, Johnny. Good words.
Sage advice, John.
Sage, I like that. Sage advice.
Sage advice. Right. I will move us on to a reasonably connected story. And this is a story that we published this morning. It's the interview that's on our YouTube channel with Darren Martin that I did from CAP HPI about the latest in used car values. So he told us that they'd fallen 2.1% in December. And as I've just explained, that means the quarterly drop is now 10.5%. It's actually one of the worst Decembers on record, but Darren was putting a positive spin on it. He said that despite that fact, he said he only called it a reasonable drop, were his words. He said he's looking at it on a more in a more positive sense. He said it's a lot less than it has been over those last 2 months. He's seeing a gradual stabilization in the market. Dealers have actually been out there buying again in December. We saw that at the auction that we went to this week. Definitely those prices were mostly going above cap. And he said that all the dealers that he's speaking to are actually looking forward to 2024. He said it's going to be a lot more positive. In January, he's only predicting a smaller fall of about 1.5%. And he actually said, as next year goes on, we might even see used car prices start to rise again. The reason for this was the fact that there's a lot less cars in the market. As we know, COVID sold a lot fewer new cars. And now we're 3 years later, that's translated into a much smaller used car park. And it means that those prices might firm up. We've seen some positive news with inflation in November, down to 3.9%. Interest rates might start coming down next year. House prices haven't fallen quite as much as people predicted. I was looking back at the predictions that Halifax made at the start of this year. They said it was going to be a 10% fall in house prices. They have only fallen 1%. So when you sort of combine these things and look at next year, I'm a little bit more positive about it than some other people are. I think that there will be people who come back into the market who've been putting off buying a used car that they want rather than need. And I think we might start seeing that happen again next year.
Plus interest rates coming down.
If that does start to happen at the back end, then next year, it only pays off to be even more positive. So I sort of agree with Darren. I think it's going to be a little, it might look a little bit more rosy next year. But I don't know. What do you think?
No, I totally agree with you, James. You know, I think that next year is looking positive in a number of ways. Housing stock, we're looking at. There is one bit of fear on the horizon, which is the price of oil looks like it's going to go up again, which might raise inflation again, which might keep interest rates where they are. But I do tend to think that in our industry, in the used car trade or the new car trade, I tend to think that it's going to be a very good year. I mean, there are obviously, you know, me and you and Johnny, we haven't spoke about, you know, what dealers are doing about EV stock and, you know, how that's affected their business and how the prices are, have just fallen out of the market. And that, I'm sure you spoke about it at length elsewhere. But yeah, I mean, look, in a positive sense, I feel pretty good about next year. I know that I've got a really good loyal customer base that come and buy from Mike Brewer Motors or One Automotive. It's a bit weird, you know, that people want to still get in the trade like you, you know, at this really strange moment in time when there is this sort of balance. Do we go one way or do we go another way? But you're being brave about doing that. But look, you know, I feel pretty positive about next year. Bring it on. I think for anyone who gets out there and works hard and puts their head down and does the thing right, does the job right, they're going to be okay.
You mentioned there about EV prices falling. And in this story, we mentioned how the different fuel types have dropped. EVs actually performed better than hybrids. They fell 2.3% EVs, while hybrids were the worst, hit 2.7%. And in our top 10 of the biggest fallers, the car models that fell in December, there were 5 hybrids. And he said that the reason for this, Darren thinks, is that hybrids are looking expensive compared to EVs now. So yeah, it's interesting to see how these market dynamics are starting to play out. We'll be right back. The Car Dealer Podcast is sponsored by SalesLink from Jato, a market insight tool that's purpose-built for franchise car dealers. Get analysis on thousands of new vehicle transactions every month from all the major brands. See model mix and trim data for the brands you sell, as well as competitor data, all in the free web-based platform. It lets you track vehicle option uptake, color preferences, and gives detailed data on pricing and discounts. Sign up for your free SalesLink account today. Visit jato.com/saleslink to start unlocking your market insights.
Right, John, take us on.
Okay. I'm going to talk about JLR, which is a topic that always does well for us. So as everyone knows, Jaguar Land Rover, particularly Land Rover, have had some difficulties in terms of insurance costs in the last 12 months or so. That comes down to, for many complicated reasons, some of which to do with how their keyless entry works, I would imagine, Range Rovers have been nicked a lot. And I don't think this is anything new. I think if you go back 30 years ago, you know, these were desirable products, weren't they? People were nicking them, and thieves will do whatever they can to get their hands on expensive cars that they can turn in, either sell on or send to another country or turn into parts, which is probably one of the issues at the minute. But for customers, it's a massive problem, isn't it? If you go and buy your nice new, I don't know what it is, 50 grand Evoque or 100 grand Range Rover, and then you're told, because you live in London, your insurance is going to be thousands and thousands of pounds a year, or even we don't want to insure you, that's a bit of a problem. So JLR even have felt this issue themselves, because as with most manufacturers, they had their own friendly insurance company, didn't they, that they called Land Rover Insurance or something like that, underwritten by somebody else. Even that had to be pulled because the insurance company wasn't up for it earlier this year. But now they're back and they've launched a new insurance product for Range Rover customers in the face of these rising thefts. So would you like to know how much it costs per month?
I'd love to. This is
4,000 quotes have been provided so far, I can tell you. The average monthly premium of under £200.
Wow, bargain. Bargain.
So it's still £2,500 a year to insure a Range Rover.
That's right. So, I mean,
we'd seen people's quotes of like 20, 25 grand a year, though, haven't we? So I suppose
it is an improvement. It is an improvement, but it does, I mean, what else could they do apart from...
I'll tell you what else they could do. Get on top of the problem of keyless entry. Just do a recall. I'll tell you, am I being a bit daft here or stupid? What's up with a key? Go back to using a bloody key. Just simple. Do a massive recall. Give everyone an ignition barrel and a door lock. It's not that hard, surely.
Welcome back to the mid-90s. Yeah, it's not a good situation. And you can see, I mean, what I find, I mean, perhaps our evidence, talking to Jamie this week about the prices of some Range Rovers he had in stock, will suggest otherwise as to what I'm about to say. But what I'm amazed by is how desirable they still are in terms of people still want to go and buy a Range Rover or a Discovery or whatever, despite the fact that, one, it might get nicked, and two, they perhaps feel the need to fit a stop lock every time.
So I was going to say that, like that one we saw in Sainsbury's, didn't we? He's obviously only just popped in for a pint of milk, and he's had to put a stop lock on his Jaguar SVR in the car park of Sainsbury's this week. When we saw that, we were like, "There's clearly a major problem here, isn't there?"
Well, you see, dealers have them on their stock as well. It's a ridiculous situation.
I think it's laughable, this whole thing. Particularly as, you know, Jaguar Land Rover, they don't sell an awful lot of vehicles. You know, they're not like a, you know, Jaguar probably only sell about 8,000 vehicles a year, where, you know, other manufacturers sell that in a week. So for Jaguar Land Rover, this is a problem I think that is easy for them to get on top of, rather than keep, you know, insurance products and create another insurance product, rather than going down that route. I think this is a problem that they can get on top of, because surely it's when you've got a keyless entry system in a car, surely that's worked by ones and zeros. It's completely digital. So there must be something that they can do on a recall. I'm pretty sure they're doing a recall, aren't they?
We should say there's a £10 million investment they've made in enhancing vehicle security, part of which is a system that they can retrofit into older, i.e. previous.
There you go. So that's what they need to be doing.
I imagine that's not a quick thing to do if they can't actually fix the how many hundreds or thousands of cars that are currently waiting for other issues that they've got at the moment.
So where are all these cars? Where are they going? Is there some sort of, you know, Eastern Bloc country that everyone's smoking around in
partially
2021 Range Rovers now?
And I think there's also, because there's a massive parts issue for the whole car industry, JLR particularly has its own problems with parts, doesn't it? But there's always going to be a desire to make money off parts, because, you know, if there's a shortage, that's one thing. The other thing is, as we've just said, talking about Jamie and his buying from auction, it's just so expensive bits, aren't they? You know, how much is a headlight for a Range Rover? A grand or something.
Well, he was saying like they're selling the used bits now online at the same price as new stuff, aren't they? Because it's a supply and demand issue. So you can see that's probably where these things are going.
It is, funny enough, this story, the stories we're talking about, this is the story that everyone's talking about in my circle. Everyone's talking about it. You switch on YouTube these days and there's dealer after dealer after dealer walking through auction houses, physical auction houses, with their phones up, doing a selfie and saying, "I've never seen so many Range Rovers for sale in the auction." And you're watching them go through the block, you know, whatever they are, Velars that book cap trade low at 13.8, and they're getting run up to £10,000. Nobody's bidding on them. People at, you know, the dealer network is, "Whoa, we don't want it on our forecourt," and walking away from it. So it is the story of the moment. And it's a bit of a shame, you know, because wherever you go in the world, you'll always see people proudly driving a Range Rover. I lived in America for a lot of my time, and I've been travelling around Europe making a new series, and there's always Range Rovers there. And I'm sure it's not just a UK problem. I'm sure it's a global problem for them as well.
Well, some of those might have actually been stolen from the UK. Who knows?
They could have been. Yeah, they could have been.
Right. I'm going
to say which countries, but they could have been.
Let me move us on to another story. We'll stop JLR bashing for 5 minutes.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Let's do it. So I'm going to tackle a reasonably complicated story. So you're going to have to bear with me, but this is about the Lookers acquisition, the dealer group Lookers, that may fall foul of takeover panel rules. So what happens when these big bidders come in for these companies is they have to lay out what they plan to do with that company after the purchase has gone ahead. And they do that because the shareholders and the directors of that business can look at that offer and see whether it is in the best interests of the company. The problem we've had at Lookers is we've gone back over the documents that were supplied by Global Auto Holdings, which is the bidding vehicle of the Canadian firm Alpha Auto Group. And we looked at them to see whether there was any reference to the huge amount of redundancies they've made since they took over that business in October. And funnily enough, there is no reference to those redundancies. Since that business was taken over, nearly 1,000 Looker staff are now at risk of losing their jobs. Roles are being cut from sales. Business managers are going. They're getting rid of some of their servicing department staff. They're across their 160 sites in the UK. They've even cancelled their Christmas parties. So it's a very, very sad state of affairs at Lookers. But we looked into this a lot further. We spoke to the takeover panel. They don't comment officially on the record on these stories, so they would not confirm or deny whether they were looking into the Lookers acquisition. We spoke to Lookers. I sent them the story that we were writing for comment, actually several times, and they didn't come back to me. They didn't make a comment, and they have commented on everything else, but they didn't comment on this one. So read into that what you will. But what could happen here? So, I mean, that's the big thing, isn't it? What can the takeover panel do? Well, they can't stop that deal going through because it's done. But what they can do is they can reprimand the business that have taken them on for not following the rules. That can be done privately, or worse, it can be done publicly. So we've seen these sorts of public announcements made by the takeover panel, by other businesses, The big one was Cadbury. When Cadbury was taken over by Kraft in 2010, they said that they were not going to close a UK factory. A week later, they closed that UK factory. You might remember that story from the newspapers. It caused a huge uproar that these American buyers came into a British business and then shut down the factory. So they got a telling off after that from the takeover panel. And there's people that I spoke to about this story that think similar thing may happen with Lookers. We don't know because we won't get told whether it's been investigated or not until such a point that it may be made public. But I think this story here stands up because there is scope for that investigation to take place, because clearly those redundancies weren't mentioned. And we talked about it on the podcast last week. They were made 2 weeks before Christmas. Those announcements were made 2 weeks before Christmas. And that is a very, very sad situation for these Lookers staff to be in. And if they'd been outlined in that document ahead of that announcement being made, maybe they would have realized these changes were coming. So yeah, I mean, it's a complicated story, but John,
it does. I mean, just looking at the announcements for investors that you've quoted in this, Bidco, which is the global auto, well, there's so many different names floating around here. Bidco attaches great importance and value to the skills, experience, and commitment of the existing management and employees of Lookers, and believes that they will be a key factor in maximizing success and growth of the business going forward. Bidco has no intention to make any changes to the condition of employment or the balances of the skills and functions. There may be some restructuring required following the effective date, in particular, but this is more around, but once Lookers ceases to be a listed company, certain corporate and support functions relating to their listed status are likely to see a reduced headcount. That's a very different thing from firing 10% of technicians, isn't it?
And exactly that, John. And Bidco refers to the company that's bidding for the That is the Canadian bidders. So yeah, this is why people who have mentioned this story to me are so upset, is because they've said this sort of stuff about the staff in advance. They said they're not going to be making the changes, that they want to keep the existing team and management team. And would the shareholders made the decision to sell their shares to this company if they knew that in a couple of weeks' time, 1,000 staff were going to be made redundant? I don't know. It might have been the same result. It might not. And I think it's that question that's pertinent to this investigation, if it takes place.
My fear with this is it just going to amount to a slap on the wrist, you know, if that was to happen? I don't think they have, you know, we'll say they have powers. And as you were saying to me outside of the podcast, it's not something you want to have happen to you as a owner of a company or a director of a company or whatever. You know, they've got some clout. But realistically, it's sort of what's done is done. That's the sad thing. You know, they can't.
Yeah, what can they do?
Rehire 10% of the staff.
They what can't. Can
that strip the company?
Yeah.
Sell off divisions of the company.
What's your gut feeling on this, Mike?
I just think it's really sad. Lookers as a business is I bought cars from Lookers and done business with them. And there's thousands of staff, they're great people. It's a good business, you know. It's one that is always nice to see on the high street, if you like. So yeah, I think it's rather sad that, you know, these companies come in, take over. The only thing they care about, particularly as you just said, on top of Christmas, when people got told 2 weeks ago, the only thing they care about is the bottom line. And they're not caring about the people, the actual people that make that business.
Well, they've bought this business with a huge amount of debt. They've saddled it with a huge amount of debt as a result of buying it. It's been funded by 3 Canadian banks. It's going to need to be refunded in 12 months' time. Interest rates are incredibly high, and they're wiping out a lot of their profit with those interest payments. So I can see why it's happened. And surely they knew how they financed this business. Surely they would have seen they had to make these changes in advance. The question here is, did they know they were going to make these redundancies in advance of that takeover?
Of course they did, yeah. You go through before you take over anything, you pour through the data and pour through the books. And they're going to have very clever analytical people that are going to say to them, the only way this is going to work is if you sell off that part of the company, you make that many people redundant, you fire that many people on the board. This is the only way this company is going to work. Where sometimes I always think if companies invest in the people, motivate people and invest in people, you can turn the company around.
Yeah, I mean, it must be pointed out, we did go to Lookers for comment. They decided not to comment on the story. So I can't say their side of the story. So, John, shall we move on to your next one?
Yes, we will. To probably the most important story of the week, possibly even the year. SsangYong is dead.
That's fighty talk, John. That's you just labelling yourself as this is the best story before we've even got to decide.
Yeah, it's just shocking, isn't
you're
it?
You're not saying... This is the week. Now, there's no doubt this is the best story of the week. This is the winning story. That's just cheating.
It's like a politician, isn't it? Yeah.
I'm not myself actually on Alistair Campbell, but...
Because you can put this together. Now start that conversation off and saying, and here's the final story.
Yeah, he might cut this all out, might
Yeah, so don't yeah. say the bit about it's the best story. Just say, and here's the final story.
God, I'm not used to being held to account in this way. Yes. Here is the final story.
That's much better.
So, it's a very big story. SsangYong is dead.
SsangYong is dead?
SsangYong dead? No, SsangYong has rebranded. So the SsangYong name is dead. Now catchily titled KGM Motors.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I can see what they've done there.
KGM.
KGM Motors.
What does that mean?
I don't know, but it's now KGM Motors. They've got a new slogan.
Right.
It is. You ready?
Yeah, go on.
Go different. AGM.
Brilliant. I mean, how much do they pay for that one? I mean, that is what a slogan.
I think probably it came from the same place as the name for your new dealership.
What, ChatGPT?
Yeah, quite possibly. Yes, so SsangYong, and the reason they've done this is because SsangYong, the company in Korea, has been having a bit of a tough time. They've had SsangYong's history is varied in terms of owners, isn't it? Once upon a time, it was owned by Daewoo. Then I think when Daewoo went bankrupt, then or sold to GM, SsangYong went somewhere else. Then SsangYong was bought by Mahindra, the Indian 4x4 company, an enormous company in India. They couldn't make SsangYong work. SsangYong is now owned by a company called KG. No, hang on. Yes, KG Group. KG Group. And they were, it wasn't perhaps the most, I don't know, store, what's the word? It wasn't the most romantic takeover. They were appointed by Seoul's bankruptcy court as the preferred bidder. So it's not like anyone really wanted poor old SsangYong, but there we are. So they're now KG Mobility because their owner is KG and they will be KGM Group or whatever.
And all the dealers are going to have to change their brand into KGM. They're going to have to start marketing a whole new firm. They're going to have to come up with a whole new... I mean, I can't see the point in it, really.
No, I can't really see the point in it. I don't think there was any particular reason why it had to be rebranded.
No, I mean, I don't think SsangYong was the best name anyway. However, they've done a lot to improve it. They've built up that brand name. They've got dealers all over the country. I mean, if I was the new owner of it, I would have stuck with it.
Yeah.
Like it or not.
I would have as well, because KGM just sounds like an accountancy firm, doesn't it?
It does, it doesn't
really convey anything.
Mike, what do you think? I mean, you love a good brand name.
I met Mr. SsangYong many, many years ago.
Mr. SsangYong?
Yeah, I met him at Geneva Motor Show. I interviewed him, actually, at Geneva. And, I mean, I'm going to be honest with you, I've struggled, and I think the majority of the UK population have struggled with the name SsangYong anyway. And that's because as soon as you mention SsangYong, people traditionally have looked at awful design. They've gone, that's that company that, you know, had ridiculous conservatories bolted to the back of estate cars. And, you know, they've had ridiculous design. And people just didn't like the name and the design of the cars was synonymous. I possibly have said, and I apologise to the current SsangYong staff because I know they do a good job. In the past, they're for cars that people don't like cars. You know, they just want, all they want is a tool. They want a weapon to get backwards and forwards to work. You don't have to desire it. It just needs to function and go. For them to rebrand this company and for it to be passed around, it almost feels like this is a grenade with a pinboard and people are just, well, you got it. No, you got it. You have it. And they're just tossing it around between each other until it's going to go bang, this company. And that's exactly what it feels like to me. I think this rebranding is not going to help it at KGM because it means nothing. You know, it means absolutely nothing. When it was SsangYong, I think Mr. SsangYong said to me, I said, you know, it's weird that you got two S's at the beginning of your name. I think that was a great way to start an interview. And he said, think of it like dueling snakes. But at least that had some tangibility to it. You know, fighting snakes meant venom and, you know, eagerness and power. And they could have marketed that. They could have marketed that as a company, but they didn't. I don't think this is going to help them at all. And God bless the people that I know, and you know, James, and you know, Johnny, that work at the company today. I just hope they get through this and something good comes out the other side of it, because it's not a bad company. They do that Muzo pickup truck is actually a pretty good pickup truck. You know, it pulls 3.5 ton, it carries a ton at the same time, and 5 passengers. And it comes with a 7-year warranty. You know, what's not to like in a thing that costs, you know, half the price of a rival? So, I mean, it's a bit of a shame, to be honest.
I definitely agree with you on that one. But can I move us on to, can I wedge one final story in, please?
Is it the best story of the week?
No, we had that.
I'm not going to try and sway the judge in any way. Right. No, this is a story about a much-loved auctioneer who's stepping down from Manheim Auction Services after an incredible 30 years in the business. And the reason I picked this story is because he's very, very well known as the Gaffer. His last auction in Manchester was yesterday, December the 21st. And he's over the years, he sold estimated 250,000 cars.
Wow.
And his name is the main reason that I've picked this story. It's because it's Andy Condé. And the reason being I've picked this story is because everybody else pronounces his name when they see it first is Andy Con. And in the press release, they had to point out the proper pronunciation of his name, because you don't want an auctioneer who's got the surname Con, do you? But what, fair play to Andy, a huge career, an incredible 30 years in the industry. I know a lot of people know and love him, and lots of messages after we published that story from people who've been in the auction halls when he sold those cars and were very sad to see him go. So enjoy your retirement, Andy. We will certainly miss you. My final story, I commend it to the house.
We did.
Just so you know, James, when you retire, we're going to issue a press release saying that your name is actually pronounced Bago.
After all these years.
It'd be a very simple headline, just saying Jim Bob's gone. That's it. Jim Bob's gone.
He's been replaced with AI. Well, I don't have any more stories. So, Mike, before I ask for your verdict, are there any stories we've missed this week?
I can't think of another one. I mean, you covered more or less KTM, Lookers, JLR, Carzoo, and the market drop. You covered quite a few things. Oh, and the retirement. So I never got that one down.
Well, that's
important. It's comprehensive.
I'll tell you what's interesting in this is I can't remember what story come from what person, so this is quite good.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to have to ask you. I'll say what were your favourite stories, and we'll work.
Well, my favourite stories were obviously the retirement of Mr. Con, because
Condé.
No, it's called Mr. Con, and the reason being is because it's just such a. You know, what an enduring career that guy's had. You don't spend 30 years in an auction house if you're not at the top of your game, you know, and I think that's a wonderful story. The other ones, when you think about it, the Ssangyong, Lookers and Carzoo stories, they're kind of miserable stories, aren't they? Mm-hmm. They're sort of, you know, it's bar humbug this time of year. They're not full of Christmas joy. You know, it's kind of horrible. The market drop... story, which I think comes from James.
This is like the X Factor. It's brilliant.
Yeah, well, that's quite a good. Although it's a market drop, but there's always a bounce with that. So if the market's dropping, there's a bounce, and we spoke about the positivity of that and what's going to happen next year and what the industry thinks and the market thinks of positivity for next year. So that's actually a really good story. But I suppose the story of the week.
Yes, yes.
Is the story that is resonating wherever I go, and it will affect, you know, thousands of people across the world and the UK. Johnny Ray, look at him. Is that JLR story?
Thank you, Simon Cowell, for nothing.
Well, sorry, James, but it is the story of the moment, isn't it? It's the one that everyone's talking about, and, you know, it's a problem. It's a big issue, and it's... What's crazy about it is I think it's an issue that's completely solvable. So that's what's weird about it. And it's a shame. You know, it's a shame. Because, you know, wherever I go in the world, as I say, I get a little bit excited when I see a Mini coming down the road or I see a Range Rover coming down the road in Los Angeles. And you've been there with me, James. And recently I've been in Germany, Poland, France. I've been back to Florida last week. When you're around and you see these cars, it kind of gives you a little thrill, gives you a little bit of excitement. You go, oh, that was made in Cowley, that Mini, or that was made, you know, up at Longbridge. And you get kind of a little bit excited about it. And, you know, it's just a shame that we've got this global sort of brand that we put out there and it's shit. It's crap.
That slightly. They're very nice. They're just a little bit thefty at the moment, but they're working.
I mean, John, I can't believe this. That's three on the bounce, isn't it? Oh, my
God. Why did you not take that story for you, James?
I know. That is the name of the game, unfortunately. And I. Well done, John.
Well, new year, new possibilities for you, James. So you never know.
Thank you.
Well, all that's left for me to say is thank you very much to Mike for coming on and judging today. It's been lovely to have you on, as ever. And best of luck with whatever filming you're off to do in the new year.
Australia.
Ooh, very nice.
Very nice.
Yes, this will be upside down. My video will be the other way up come January. So I'll be off for several weeks down under making a new part of the series of Wheeler Dealers. We're making down under. We're very excited about it.
Well, best of luck, then, Mike.
Well, we
Merry Christmas
to
you. Merry Christmas to you and Michelle and all the family.
And well, thank you very much, James. We really appreciate it. I love you guys. Merry Christmas to you, to Becky, to the kid. Kids, because your brood is like the blessed family. And Johnny Ray, happy Christmas to you and your goldfish.
Well, on that very strange note, it's time to end the podcast. So thank you as well to James for judging, being here. and wearing a ridiculous jumper. And thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode, so make sure you're subscribed so you can be notified when that goes live. If you want to check out the stories we mentioned today, take a look in the show notes below or head to cardealermagazine.co.uk. James is raising his finger at me. This is unprecedented.
I just wanted to say there might be some people watching this on YouTube who don't actually know this is a weekly podcast. So if they want to find it, Car Dealer Podcast on the usual channel, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc., etc. We don't have Mike Brewer on every week, which is why this one's on YouTube. But if they want to find us, come and see us. We will make them feel very welcome.
Very good, James. Thank you. Thank you all for listening. And goodbye. I'm off to feed my goldfish.